Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present. We're on location today to talk about the contributions of enslaved and free blacks to the American Revolution. Colonial Williamsburg this October celebrates Brothers in Arms, with a weekend of 18th century military encampments, demonstrations, and character interpretations. I'm Lloyd Dobbins on History.org. Today I'm talking with Richard Josie about a slave who might have been the first double agent, James Armistead. He wasn't exactly James Bond, but James Armistead proved to be a brilliant spy, yet he's often overlooked or, I guess, ignored. Why is that?
Well, I suppose a good reason is because of the fact that there's so limited documentation on him as to exactly what things he did that were specific to James Armistead. I mean, there's some other spies. They're using Negroes in this time frame for spies on both sides, the Patriot and the Loyalist cause, but because of the fact that there's so little known about him. Actually, last night I was just reading some information about him that before I even start to really speak on it, I have to go back and double check and make sure, like a birth date. And I mean, everyone, it's pretty much everyone is pretty consistent with the fact that he was from New Kent, so he's a Virginia born 18th century black slave. And it seems as though in the 1780s time frame, he took it upon himself to want to join that, and asked his master if it was okay with his master if he could join the Patriot cause. And that's when he linked up with the Marquis de Lafayette, found himself on both sides of the war.
Now, I have two different sources. One says that he started as a spy at the siege of Richmond by Benedict Arnold.
Right,
and
right.
The other says he started at the siege of Yorktown.
Yeah.
Where did he start?
Most, because Kaplan and the black presence in the American Revolution, from him as well as a couple of other sources, they all seem to say that Armistead started at the siege of Richmond. And first he started underneath Benedict Arnold, and that was kind of how he made his way into eventually getting into Cornwallis's camp and overhearing all of those sorts of things. Now, at some point in time, it appears that Cornwallis was actually under the impression that James Armistead was a spy for him.
That's what I read.
Right.
So he was a double.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Cornwallis trusted him so much that he sent him over to the Americans or the Continental side. And of course, he was spying for Lafayette.
Exactly.
He eventually changed his last name to Lafayette.
Yeah, 1784. 1784 was when he actually received his freedom. And he received his freedom largely due to a correspondence that was received to the Virginia General Assembly by General Lafayette. And for his services, the information that was endurously collected in honor of General Lafayette's push for him to receive freedom, he changed his last name to Lafayette's, and then most folks would know of him as James Armistead Lafayette, given the 1784 name change.
What do we know about him before he started being a spy? Anything?
His master's name was William Armistead. They were from New Kent. Again, one of the sources I want to check into states that he was born as early as 1748, which makes it real interesting because being out in New Kent and being part of a plantation atmosphere, working in the fields, it makes it real different than how we sometimes perceive history. For example, the intelligent Negro, if you will, being the one who was working for his master in the city, and not necessarily seeing the contributions of a farmhand, a field laborer.
Yeah, they are usually not very well respected for their intelligence.
Exactly.
Nor is it required. I mean,
go
pick the tobacco and shut up.
Exactly.
But you wonder how he, you know, being a spy isn't that easy. You have to be quite careful. And really, if somebody catches you, they're not going to treat you kindly.
Exactly. Well, you know, the really interesting thing here is that one thing that seems consistent with different historians is that James is the name. And when I look at James Armistead, when I just look at James Armistead Lafayette now, I look at him as being one that potentially represents a great number. Because in the ways that spies are operating, it seems as though James was, as a waiter within the camp, serving the food and such and overhearing the conversations, then he would take that information back and not necessarily go directly to the lines all the time. There were others that were, it was a group of Negroes that were doing some running for him. So he was, I'll call him the master spy in a sense. And he had little, other spies that worked, you know, almost in a sense for him. He kind of sent them off with information and coming back. So it's just proven to be, it's kind of a network now.
What do you think, how do you think he was able to persuade Cornwallis that he would be useful as a spy for him? I mean, that's a selling job.
One of the things that I think that allowed James the ability to persuade Cornwallis of such was, in general, the British way of thinking at the time in regards to slavery. Ever since the 1760s, this whole idea of the British using slaves and the aspect of war or getting back at these rebels here in the colonies has been something that they've been talking about in Parliament, you know, as far as, like I said, 1760s. So the way that they perceive this whole situation with the war going on and the fact that slaves aren't happy to be slaves, and they're thinking that slaves at any given time want to go against their masters or go against the American cause, I think it made Cornwallis, and that whole mindset seems to have made it easier for Cornwallis to accept the fact that this slave who doesn't want to be in his position and has known about all of the abolitionist kind of thoughts and sentiments in England and such, I'm thinking Cornwallis is thinking, we're the British. We've come here to free you. Why don't you help us?
Okay. Yeah, so he convinced himself.
Right, exactly. I think he was just convinced based off of the fact that he could point the finger and say, well, you know, these are your masters. These are the ones that are holding you. These are the ones that sell your family off from you and put the lash to your back and all of these sorts of things. And, you know, like you said, kind of convinced himself. I can imagine he was very surprised at Yorktown.
Do we know whether he ever found out?
That's one of those things that we really would love to find out. Of course, again, you know, there's some sources that, you know, there's so many different points of views and so many thoughts in regards to how, in special regards to James, how he did what he did, that it's really difficult to know if it's a fact that Cornwallis saw him at the camp. A couple pieces, they kind of allude to the fact that Cornwallis was surprised when he came to the camp and he saw James Armistead there with a red coat on. But whether it was a red coat or a blue coat or, you know, any of those sorts of details, it's hard to tell. And so what we have to do here is we just have to interpret and create a picture that people can associate with to see how the circumstance was.
You know, from Cornwallis's point of view, he's just lost his army. He just lost the siege. He's got so many problems, you can't even begin to think about the number of them. And then to top it all off, he finds out that his trusted spy was doubling on him.
Right. I can only imagine the look on his face or the what it was that he was thinking. And I hope that I do come across something that says that, you know, maybe some memoirs of Cornwallis or something of that nature where, you know, we actually know that Cornwallis came to the camp and looked and saw him, I mean, that would be a very, very interesting thing.
Yeah, of course. If we want to, we can just make it up.
That's how history works. Right?
That's how history works sometimes. But yeah, we try to be real, you know, and that's the whole thing about this whole thing is just trying to be real careful with the history, and knowing exactly what, and you know, for the sake of what a lot of our guests like to hear in regards to the interactions and whatnot. We may actually, you know, in the course of a program, speak to the fact that maybe Cornwallis saw James Armistead at the camp, because, I mean, that's a very interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
For the Brothers in Arms Weekend, we're looking at actually having a program where we have James Armistead
mm-hmm.
Interacting with guests. And in a 1784 time frame, after he's received his freedom and reflecting back on all that's gone on.
What do people ask you when you're interpreting James Armistead?
A lot of folks ask, they ask one of two questions. The first question is why?
Mm-hmm.
Why would James be a spy for the American cause that are the ones that enslaved you? And, and of course, you know, for me, the proper response is, this is home. There is no other home that I know. And, you know, certainly it's one thing to serve a master that you don't know. For example, Cornwallis or the British. But for him, for me as James, it's best for me to serve the master that I do know, potentially gain my freedom.
So the first question is actually the Cornwallis point of view.
Exactly.
Why would you do this?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Or actually, why would you do it for even Lafayette?
Mm-hmm.
And Lafayette clearly had a different mindset in regards to the institution of slavery anyway. But then the other question is, well, James, after you got your freedom, after the siege of Yorktown, you went back home, back to your master's property in New Kent. Why didn't you just run off and be free? Why not? For me as James, the simple answer is family. The family is something that you're going to always have, and you can go anywhere and everywhere that you want to go, but if you ain't got no family, then you just you. And I always portray James as being incomplete without his family.
Brothers in Arms is October 8th and 9th. For more information, check history.org, where you'll also find more to download and hear. That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Hope you enjoyed it.